Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know, today's material is, well, it's really something special.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've got this website, the Laszlo Tarr Art Gallery. And it's just amazing, all these different pieces of his art, all kinds of mediums. And then we also have this manuscript. It's called Moon and Star. And it's by his son, Julius Tarr.
Wow. So we've got like the visual and the personal story.
Exactly. It's like this incredible chance to really understand Laszlo Tarr, the artist.
Yeah.
Not just from the art itself, but from, you know, like his life story and everything that happened around him, historically speaking.
That's so cool to see how those things kind of come together, the life and the art.
Totally. And it's really the lives of both Laszlo and his wife, Olga Tarr. They were Hungarian Americans, and their story, well, let me tell you, it's a story of love, resilience, escape, all against the backdrop of post-World War II, Hungary, and, you know, the whole rise of communism.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, heavy stuff. And their son, Julius, he's obviously so dedicated to keeping their memory alive. He even mentions in the manuscript that he's not, like, you know, the best writer.
Oh.
But he says his main focus is just getting their story out there, which is amazing in itself, right? So I think we're ready to dive into this world.
I'm ready.
So the manuscript starts by telling us about Laszlo's early life. He was, you know, formerly trained artist, Hungarian-American, ultimately. But his passion for art, it was there from the very beginning.
I mean, some people, they've just got that creative spark.
Totally. But here's the thing. His father wasn't exactly thrilled about it.
Really? So, like, not a supportive family background in that sense?
Not at first, no. And Julius, the son, he kind of paints this picture of Laszlo as this unruly kid, you
mm-hmm.
know, always drawn to art. And then there's his younger brother, also named Julius, actually, who was more the studious type.
That's interesting. So already a bit of a contrast there.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember the context here, right? Their father was a school headmaster.
Okay, so like an educator himself.
And a landowner.
Yeah.
In their village, Bessinyod, they were considered, you know, pretty well-to-do. So Laszlo's artistic leanings weren't exactly, you know, the expected path.
Makes sense, yeah. And what about Olga? Where does she fit into all of this?
So Olga's upbringing was different, like totally different. She was the youngest of five kids. And her family, they were working class, you know, her father was a tailor, and they lived in the same village.
But different worlds, it sounds like.
Right. And Julius points out that because of this social gap, and because they had, like, a five-year age difference, they didn't really cross paths much when they were younger.
Ah, so those social structures were pretty rigid back then.
Yeah, very much so. But things changed, of course. As Olga got older, Laszlo started noticing her, especially when he would come back home from his boarding high school in Debrecen.
You can imagine that raised some eyebrows a bit.
Oh, you bet it did. Maybe. Because, and this is where things get interesting, when Laszlo asked for Olga's hand in marriage in 1948.
This is like Romeo and Juliet almost.
It caused a huge stir, especially within their families.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. While Olga's parents were thrilled, Laszlo's family, like his father and his brother, they were not on board at all.
Because of the social difference.
Exactly. It was a big deal back then, you know. And I think this is where we start to see a bit of Laszlo's, like, you know, his strength of character. He went ahead and married her, despite all that.
That takes guts. And it shows how strong their connection must have been to defy all that pressure.
Totally.
Yeah.
They did end up getting their family's blessings eventually, but it wasn't easy. And, you know, it makes you think about how that early experience of, like, defying expectations might have influenced him later on, artistically.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Like, maybe it pushed him to be more bold in his art, too.
Maybe. But anyway, let's move on to the next chapter. So they got married, and then the next year, they had their first child, Julia. Olga finished her education as a school teacher. Laszlo graduated from this really prestigious art academy in Budapest, and they both started their careers.
Okay, so they're building a life together. This is, like, the happy part of the story before things get...
Well, yeah, before the storm hits, kind of. Because now the manuscript brings in this looming presence. Communism. It was 1949, and the Iron Curtain had descended.
Oh, right. I mean, we all know about the Iron Curtain, but to actually hear about it from someone who lived through it...
It's different, right. And Julius, he describes this growing resentment among the people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the system, it basically stifled freedom and any hope of individual success.
And it wasn't just about, like, economic hardship, right? It was about the whole atmosphere of control.
Exactly. Julius talks about how people were terrified to speak out. You could disappear, you could be punished, your whole family could suffer.
It was a total control thing.
And it wasn't just abstract, you know? Mm. It had real consequences for Laszlo's family. In 1955, the party took away his father's property, 34 acres of land. Just gone.
Wow, that's brutal.
And they removed him as headmaster, too. Just like that. Laszlo's words in the manuscript, he said, everything was just taken away, stolen by the communists and the Russians.
I can't imagine the anger and the sense of injustice he must have felt.
And his family, they were forced to move into this tiny apartment. Even his brother, the doctor, they kept him poor on purpose, just to keep him in line.
It's so dehumanizing, you know, to have your life ripped apart like that.
Absolutely. So you can see why Laszlo was starting to feel trapped, desperate even. Now, Olga's family, they didn't have as much to lose materially, but she saw what happened to Laszlo's family, and it really solidified their bond. You know, they were in this fight together.
Right, like a shared experience of injustice.
Exactly. Then in 1956, things started to boil over. There was this huge revolt against the communist regime. And for Laszlo, this was like a glimmer of hope, maybe a chance to escape.
It was a risky gamble, though.
Oh, absolutely. But it was a risk he felt he had to take, you know, especially after everything his family had been through.
So what did they do? I mean, how do you even start to plan something like that?
So early one Sunday morning around 2 a.m., Laszlo woke Olga up and he was like, we have to go. We have to get out of here. He had been listening to Radio Free Europe. And they were talking about people escaping to Austria.
So this wasn't completely out of the blue. He had some information.
Yeah. And he even had a vague memory of a trip to Austria from years before. He knew it was outside of the Iron Curtain.
Okay. So a plan started forming.
But Olga, you know, she was understandably hesitant. I mean, can you imagine leaving everything behind? Two young kids. It was a huge decision.
Especially with a five-month-old baby.
Right. But by 4 a.m., Laszlo was packing. He was determined. And Olga, she trusted him. She saw how much pain he was in, how much they had both suffered.
And, you know, in moments like that, you kind of have to trust your gut, even if it's terrifying.
Absolutely. So they packed whatever essentials they could fit into two shopping bags, clothes, diapers, some food. Olga, she was so resourceful, she even hid their little bit of money in her hair bun.
Wow. That's smart thinking under pressure.
Right. They snuck out of their house around 4:40 a.m., making up this story about going on a picnic, if anyone saw them.
Wow. It's like something out of a spy movie or something.
It really is. And it's just incredible how brave they were. You know, they were leaving behind everything they had built since 1948. Their home, their families, their friends, all of it.
And for what? They had no idea what was waiting for them, if they would even make it.
And their journey. It was hard. Really hard. They started on foot, walking for miles along the side of the road. Laszlo was carrying their baby, Leslie, in a backpack. And Julia was walking with Olga. They hid the two bags.
It's hard to even picture that, you know? Walking for miles with small children, not knowing what's ahead.
It's unimaginable, really. And, you know, the manuscript points out this interesting difference between Laszlo and Olga. Laszlo is more about the big picture, you know, getting to freedom. Olga was more focused on the details. How are we going to get there? Where exactly are we going?
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, you need both those perspectives in a situation like that, right? The big dream and the practical steps.
Absolutely. And as they were walking, they started meeting other people doing the same thing, trying to escape. And their group grew to 17 people, all sorts of people, families, individuals, and even a couple of Hungarian policemen who were also trying to get out.
Wow, even the policemen. That's crazy.
I know. It shows how widespread the disillusionment was with the regime, even among those who were supposed to be upholding it.
It's like everyone was just trying to survive, find a better life.
Totally. And the policemen, they actually ended up being really helpful, you know, kind of guiding the group and using their knowledge of the area. Anyway, as they got closer to the border, it got really dangerous. The border was heavily guarded. And one of the policemen, he led them to this farmhouse where the owners, incredibly kind people, let them hide in their barn until nightfall.
You have to wonder about the courage of those farmers too, right? I mean, they were risking a lot by helping them.
Absolutely. But that act of kindness, it probably meant the world to Laszlo and Olga and the others. It gave them a chance to rest, to gather their strength for what was coming next.
Which was?
The border crossing. It was the most dangerous part of their journey. They had to go through the forest at night, trying to avoid the guards.
I bet that was terrifying.
Oh, incredibly so. And the manuscript describes this moment. It's so intense. They're walking through the woods. It's cold. It's damp. They're following the moonlight. And then all of a sudden, there's this shouting and a flare goes up, lighting up the whole area.
Oh, my God. They must have been spotted.
And the worst part, baby Leslie started crying.
Oh, no, not the baby.
Everyone was panicking, trying to shush him because they knew if the guards heard them, they were done for.
It's just heartbreaking to imagine, you know, that fear and the instinct to protect their children above all else.
And you can just picture Olga shielding Leslie and Laszlo just frozen with fear. But the flare died out, and they kept going, crawling through the woods, just hoping to stay hidden.
So what happened next? Did they make it?
Well, after what must have felt like hours, they saw lights in the distance, just faint little twinklings. And they had no idea, was it freedom or was it the border guards?
That moment of uncertainty must have been agonizing.
Totally. So they sent a few scouts ahead, including one of the policemen, to check it out. And they waited, you know, heart pounding, holding their breath.
I can't even imagine.
And then the scouts came back and they whispered, "Yes, I see it. It's the Austrian border."
Relief, pure relief.
And they saw the medics with their red crosses, and they knew they were safe. So they ran towards this little wooden bridge, the last thing separating them from freedom.
And they cross.
They cross. They made it. And the manuscript describes this incredible moment of Olga and Laszlo embracing, crying, reunited with their kids on Austrian soil. They had lost everything, materially speaking, but they had each other, and they were free.
And that's all that matters in the end, isn't it?
Exactly. But Julius doesn't sugarcoat things. He acknowledges that it was still hard starting over in a new country with a new language with practically nothing. But they had each other, and they had freedom.
So powerful. And it makes you think about Laszlo's art in a whole new light, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, can you imagine how all of that, the oppression, the escape, the fear, the hope, how it must have shaped his artistic vision? Maybe those themes of displacement, resilience, even the different landscapes he painted, maybe it's all connected to his story.
It has to be, right? Like, his life and his art are inseparable.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's so amazing that we have both of these sources, you know?
Yeah.
The website with all of his art and then the manuscript giving us this incredible backstory. So I really urge you, our listeners, go check out the Laszlo Tarr Art Gallery website. Look at his work, his watercolors, his oil paintings, his drawings, his woodcuts, and think about his story. Think about what he went through. It might change how you see his art entirely.
And I think this deep dive, it's a powerful reminder that history isn't just dates and facts. It's about people, real people, living through these incredible events. And their stories, they can help us understand the past in a much more personal, emotional way.
Absolutely. So as you think about Laszlo and Olga's story, I want you to think about your own family history or the stories of people you know. What are their moons and stars, you know? What guided them through tough times? And how can we make sure their stories aren't forgotten? It's something to think about. Thank you for joining us for this incredible deep dive.